for people to connect to this great thing called sport is extraordinarily valuable and powerful.
They are very strong words.
To hear these players talk about this.
Why do you see it differently?
Athletes suffer from this. It's not fair.
Why were you expelled?
Good question.
The Ticket. Revelations.
Hello, welcome to The Ticket Catch-Up. I'm Tracy Holmes. This week, a one-on-one interview with IOC member and president of the Australian Olympic Committee, John Coates, recently promoted once again to the IOC vice presidency. As you'll hear, we discussed many of the most pressing issues. Tokyo is battling increasing COVID-19 infections and a quickly falling level of public support for the Games. Is the IOC working with Tokyo organisers to prepare them for the possibility that the Games may have to be cancelled? We speak of the twin global challenges of the coronavirus and the Black Lives Matter protests, gender equality and the future for professional sports, plus simplifying the Games, and whether the Olympic movement remains rooted in ideals established in a different time and a different era.
The Ticket.
Well, John Coates, congratulations, I guess. You're vice president once again of the IOC. What does that mean exactly?
It means that I've got something to keep me busy during the last 4 years of my term as an IOC member. But it's being on the executive board is very satisfying intellectually, and satisfying in terms of knowing that you can contribute to a better Olympic movement, essentially. So put aside the personal stuff. It's you are at the coalface, and particularly at the coalface as we're dealing with COVID-19 and Tokyo 2020 postponement.
Let's talk a little bit about Tokyo, because, you've got this whole pandemic thing that nobody knows where it's going to go, how it's going to end, or if in fact it will end. And you've got public support in Japan fading, I guess, as each day it doesn't get better. How does an Olympic Games navigate that? How does an IOC navigate that and balance the expectations of an organising committee that has been so committed for so many years?
Well, we couldn't do it if we didn't have an organising committee and governments come from Abe down, and the Tokyo Municipal Government with Koike, who weren't dedicated and committed to delivering what they started out to do. And I am quite amazed, as we have many meetings a week with them, that once the decision was taken to postpone, and it was taken to postpone by 1 year, that they've... the way they've maintained their enthusiasm. We're talking of an organising committee staff of 3,200 people who turn up every day and from everything I can see, continue to be motivated to deliver what they started.
Do you also have to make sure that in the back of their mind somewhere is the possibility that it may not happen?
I haven't done that. We've taken the view that the Games will commence on the 23rd of July 2021. And yes, there are discussions under which will increase over the next 6 months. As we see where COVID's at, there's discussions about different scenarios under which the Games could take place. And then there will be discussions on, once we identify the different scenarios we might be facing, on the countermeasures you'd have to take place. Just as we're not raising that thought with our athletes are going ahead on the basis that the Games is going to take place. I take it that I've got an obligation to do everything possible to honour that opportunity for these athletes too.
Let's talk a bit about the athletes, because at the same time you've got the COVID pandemic happening, almost running in parallel is this whole Black Lives Matter movement and the protest movement that we've seen in various parts of the world take shape in different ways. Rule 50 of the Olympic Charter prevents any sort of protest in that regard. But I'm wondering if the world has changed, John, and whether the IOC looks at that, whether the IOC holds on to these ideals that were formed in a different time and a different era, and perhaps the world itself is changing around the IOC movement.
Well, the world's changing, but the Rule 50 and the IOC's position doesn't prohibit athletes expressing their views at the time of the games on social media or in media interviews. Rule 50, as interpreted by the IOC, is to do with the podium and to do with the field of play. And we have, the IOC Athletes Commission has invited other athletes commissions to look at, is there other opportunities where you, if those of you who feel strongly on a cause such as racism, this is your opportunity. We understand that you're at the Olympic Games. Is there more opportunities that you'd like us to consider? And I think the answer is going to be, if there are opportunities outside the podium, outside the field of play, then they'll be welcomed.
I had an interesting chat with one of your fellow IOC members about this, as you know, Anita de France. And it's really interesting coming from a woman of colour who says, of course, you know, she supports all of the movement and the protest, but being an IOC and Olympic devotee as a former Olympian herself, she wants that clarity to stay. She wants that podium to be sacrosanct. But on the other side of that, you've got one of the greatest moments in Olympic sport that is celebrated widely now with the Black Power salute, which wouldn't have happened had it have been in a press conference or outside the Olympic venue.
Yeah, it's a different opportunity. I certainly concede that. But and that's totally to do with racism. It was in the context of the civil rights movement in America at the time. And there are other acts of discrimination. There are other political protests that one might want to make. I think generally, though, I'm of the view that we should continue to protect the sanctity of that opportunity. I'm going to be very interested to see what our athletes' view is going to be. You know that they've been surveyed by our Athletes Commission, former Olympians and current Olympians, and pleasingly, not on racism, but on inequality in this country, they took the opportunity to have a meeting with our Indigenous Advisory Committee as to what more we can contribute positively to improve the lot of Indigenous Australians in our communities. And I think that showed a lot of maturity on behalf of our people, our athletes, and we'll see what's there. But it's got to be understood the IOC is not standing in the way of people taking the opportunity to express their total opposition to racism, as I have, at media conferences and other opportunities during the Games.
One of the areas where the IOC has really succeeded is in gender equality. How has the IOC gone about and achieved that when, on a day-to-day basis, in so many other areas, in so many individual sports, if you take them one by one, the same sort of 50-50 split has not come about yet? And there's great concerns for women's sport and female athletes after this pandemic because they've almost been sidelined in a lot of the discussions.
We just said we were going to do it. We just said that we expect the international federations, when they submit their programs for inclusion in the Olympic Games, to work towards it. In my own sport of rowing, we've moved from 36% women, say in 2000, maybe later, to 50-50. And I think I had a fair bit to do there, and I had a fair bit to do in some of the other sports too, in getting them to understand that this is equality, not equity. The difference rowing used to say, oh yeah, but 36% represents the number of women who participate in the sport at every level. I said, yeah, but unless we say we're going to have equal events for men and women and equal athletes, we'll never get to equality. Equity, I've had that debate with quite a few of the sports. Not all have quite understood it, but they have all moved to equality also because it's one of the characteristics that has become quite clear, the characteristics or criteria upon which funding is distributed to them. Staying on the Olympic program is dependent on it. And I think we've done a very, very good job in that in the last period.
So what would your advice be then to the professional sports, like you might be talking about the major football codes, for instance, that haven't made that leap yet?
Well, be careful and let them respect their autonomy. But they shouldn't be scared of it. They should embrace it. I'd like to think that the Sevens has done for rugby a great deal. It's got a whole community of mothers, being more happily involved, if the families being involved because the daughters can play as well. So I just think they've got to embrace it and take the opportunities that it will present. But as I acknowledge, there's a long way to go.
So when you look at the Olympic Games and where it's heading, the Olympic movement more generally, we heard this week that Qatar has announced it's interested in putting in a bid for the Games, perhaps as early as 2032. Is that still part of the mandate of the IOC to take the Games to places it hasn't been before? Or are we just going to see a whole new way of doing business because of COVID-19? And in how many other areas of life and business changes have had to be made?
The IOC is always happy to have as many candidate cities as possible. There's nothing new there. And I'm not going to comment because I'm very much involved in the Brisbane candidacy. I'm not commenting on other candidates other than to say, wearing my IOC hat, we welcome as many as possible.
We know that the Youth Olympic Games had to be postponed, the next summer edition, which was going to be in Dakar. That's now not going to happen in 2022, but 2026. What other changes do you think are going to be most significant in this new era, if you like, post-COVID?
Yeah. Well, they were changes at the request of the Senegalese government. They thought it was difficult, and we also thought it was going to be difficult for us organisationally to be running the Tokyo Games in 21, Beijing in 22, and then in Dakar in 22. So we were happy to do that. Happy. It's a pity that a generation of athletes in that age group are not going to have a multi-sport opportunity. We hope that many of them will still be looked after in World Junior Championships. Other changes will emanate from the work that we're doing on simplifying the games, the further work, which is really for Tokyo, which is really an extension of that which we've done for Agenda 2020 and the new norm. The move towards using existing venues and temporary venues rather than having new venues that mightn't be used again, reducing the capacities we require, multi-use of venues, those things. We're looking at many initiatives for Tokyo in simplification, and I can see that many of those, I think, will have a permanent place in the Olympics. And that will make it more attractive for us to give a wider range of cities who could potentially host the Games.
So just to bring you back to an Australian focus at the moment, what do you see as the future for Australian sport and where it's going on the back of COVID-19? Because we know that we've seen television broadcast deals written downwards. We know that there's now, you know, collective bargaining agreements are going to be renegotiated. And it looks like the ever-growing bubble is perhaps deflating, and what that says for the future of sport in a country like Australia.
Yeah, well, it's a very competitive environment here. When you particularly look at football with the four codes and a small population base that we have. And so I think the individual codes are going to need to have a look at themselves, have a look at issues such as gender equality, what they're doing in developmental programs, how they're getting into the community themselves. So I think that'll be the case. They've got to present themselves as a product that is worthwhile to the broadcasters to fund. So it is a very competitive environment. And then, in terms of, there are structural reforms that are taking place in some Australian sports. some necessarily. I think that they all should be looked at on a case-by-case basis, and maybe that's a way also of improving the by improving the governance might make them more attractive too.
Does that have an impact on the Olympics as well? If the Games goes ahead in Tokyo without crowds, for instance, do broadcasters who pay the IOC a lot of money say it's not the same atmosphere as we thought we were going to get? We'd like a bit of a refund, please.
At this stage, we're planning for the Games to go ahead with spectators. I haven't heard of any suggestion of an abatement if there aren't spectators.
All right, we'll leave it there. John Coates, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Tracy.
The Ticket.
Tracy, you know I'd love talking to you.
Look, just to put it bluntly, there are some dickhead coaches and trainers out there.
I think I've actually heard that label applied to you.
Well, hopefully the whole thing will not develop into World War III.
The Ticket. Revelations.